down to brass tacks, Reginald Farley and Noel Lynch. Let me hear your comments on the contribution that we just got from Ainslie Benn and the degree to which when Arthur being a Dem made any difference to the Barbados Labour Party as you saw it.
Well, David, I think Ainslie said it came from a Dem household. He didn't say he was a Dem. So that might be a very funny
But he was point. A Dem at some point, I suppose.
No.
Okay,
no,
let me hear the distinct difference.
Never had a Labour Party, which is a fundamental difference. However,
okay, let me
I think, though, that in all seriousness, perhaps that was a great blessing because he understood that in Barbadian families, we have differences of perspectives, different political perspectives. There are families in the same household. Some are Seventh-day Adventists. Some go to church on Sunday. Of those who go on Sunday, some are traditional Anglicans, some are Pentecostal. We have Barbados who support any other cricket team other than the West Indies cricket team. And recognizing really that diversity, but within the unity of all being Barbadians, I think was important. So here is it. He was raised in a household in which the Democratic Labour Party supporters, he went to Jamaica and he saw what, in that period, what too much of a, using political differences as a main differentiated among people, what that resulted in. So on his return to Barbados, and certainly seeing the work of the Barbados Labour Party, the work of Grant Yalom's, Son Tom, Bree St. John, he made a conscious choice that he would want to advance the development of his people through the vessel of the Barbados Labour Party. So to me, the difference was not that starkly ideological that he switched from one to the other, but he made the clear decision, yes, I'm going to pursue my goal of using my talent and my time and avoid getting treasure to advance my people and my country. But that in and of itself must never be a point of difference to split my family. And then it must never be a point on which to split the people of Barbados. So as I said earlier, the matter of the politics of inclusion was really about recognizing differences in society, but our togetherness. And I think it was a rich crucible within which his political character was built. And I think we're all more fortunate for that.
Noel Lynch?
Let me say that, Reginald Farley, I don't believe that he was ever a Dem. He was brought up, as I said, in a Dem household. But people that know Mr. Barros have told me that he had a lot of traits, a lot of Mr. Barrow's traits. And I think those good traits are universal. I don't think they belong to any one person or any one party. Someone has told me in Barbados already that the only reason, Lynch, that there's two political parties in Barbados is that there are too many of you all to hold in one. He said that the challenge is that all these political parties have the same ideology. But they told me that Mr. Arthur learned a lot, had a lot of Mr. Barrow's traits, maybe he had a lot of Tom's traits, and maybe a lot of Randy Adams' traits, but they tell me he was a hard taskmaster, you know. Owen set very high standards of accountability. Owen never tolerated tardiness, or lack of preparation, or variation from any course of action that you'd promised to the Barbadian people. And they told me that a lot of that was the way in which Mr. Barrow also ran his cabinet. So I don't necessarily think that he brought anything from a political party, but from being experienced at that level, being open and experienced to Mr. Barrow's traits, I think a lot of it was important. He was a voracious reader. He told me that Mr. Barrow and Tom Adams were the same way, and he encouraged his ministers to read. But these traits are universal. And I believe that when Arthur looked into both political parties, saw what was good and bad, and each brought the good things to us. I'll say one other thing. If it wasn't for, there are a lot of people who believe, a lot of political analysts that believe that had Mr. Arthur not opened up the Barbados Labour Party to the best of what the Democratic Labour Party had to offer, that we would have lost the 2003 general election. That people think that spreading that big tent was really one of the ways in which the Barbados Labour Party survived in 2003. And I'll tell you, he believed in this concept of getting the best of everything and everyone to work for the good of Barbados. Whether it was a Dem trait, a BLP trait, it was a good trait.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Both, I'm here, the band is still here.
Yes.
Both gentlemen spoke extremely well, and they're both correct there in saying he may not be have been a carrier member of the den. But let me say this to you. I knew Arthur from, he told me he was a baby. They knew Arthur from 1981 or thereby. I know Arthur better than all of them.
And what do you know about him, therefore?
Well, I know that I said before what I know about him. Very intelligent. In fact, once he's put his hand to the plow, there's no turning back.
No, they're disputing that he was a dam. You're saying...
No. They're disputing he was a dam, but I'm telling him that he grew up in a dam's house. I'm not saying... I did say in my opening remarks to you that I cannot say that he was a member of the Democratic...
He was not a card-carrying member, but you can carry a political support deep down in your bosom, too.
True, but they don't have to defend all the people. They're going to put on the defense. The man has his own views, and he respected the views of others. So you don't have to come and say, no, he was never them. No, man, he was not always a B neither.
All right.
I'll come off now, and thanks very much for entertaining me,
Thank you very much for calling, and our condolences to you and other members of the family. Down to brass tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program. I'm just checking to see if any of these people here who came online via Zoom is with us. If you are, just let's hear from you. Chances are that you might have been waiting for so long, you might have gone for a break. My apologies. Down to brass tacks. Let's take another call.
Ms. Ellis?
Hi.
Can you kindly allow me to wrap up my tribute to Mr. Arthur Tynes?
Wrap up? You still here?
Yep.
Were you here very long?
I was.
Down to brass tacks. Yeah. Hello. It's a long time. A couple of other people who want to get in. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, Alderman Adams here?
Yes, Mr. Adams.
Oh, dear.
A former senator.
Yes, I am duty-bound as a former student of the Coleridge and Parish School and also a principal of the school to pay a tribute to one of our most illustrious sons. I perhaps want to start by saying that young persons and historians should perhaps look into the history of the school and to see what it is about the school that it has been able to give to the great nation of Barbados some of its very greatest sons, of course, including Mr. Owen Arthur. Now he is following in the footsteps of Bishop Broome and Bishop Goodrich from the Windward Islands, Calvin Goodrich and Winston Cox, Sir Clifford Husbands and Sir Elliot Belgrove, among others, and Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford, and of course, Owen followed him as prime ministers. And one of the things I want to say while paying tribute to Mr. Arthur is the fact that some people fail to recognize that it is one of the duties of an outstanding school is actually to produce leaders. And given the list of persons I just mentioned, one would have to see to what extent a neighborhood school, and not only a school, but a neighborhood school from the north, and in that respect, I also want to include All Saints Boys School and the Coleridge and Parish School, that has been able to take students from very ordinary households and elevate them to positions of power, prestige, and privilege. I want to make the point in paying tribute to Mr. Arthur that he never, hid the fact that he was the son of a butcher and a mother who worked in the agricultural fields. And, of course, through education and hard work, he was able to pull himself up, I would say, by his bootstraps, mainly through discipline and perseverance, and indeed, I would add, sheer force of character, which would also come from education, which really enabled him to, perhaps one could say, navigate the proverbial potholes of party politics in Barbados, and to, in a way, bring himself to occupy the highest position in the country, and to do so for 13 years. So it's a tribute to him, but not only to himself, but to obviously to his parents, and to the two neighborhood schools which I just mentioned. So the transformational power of those schools are extremely important, and I believe that when persons are looking to reform education in Barbados, that ought to be.
So what is the secret that the school has had over the years to create this transformational power?
I think that what the school had was a commitment to the students from ordinary households. Almost every person I called are persons from very ordinary households. And the school itself had that nurturing aspect.
Who or what drove that in the period?
I think that in the area of the primary school, the teachers themselves came from among the students there, the All Saints School, and then I would say one of the highest aims of the All Saints Boys Schools and other schools from the area was to get these bright young boys from ordinary households into the quarter school, not to foundation and various other far-flung places that had their good school, but to ensure that those persons from the area, through education, would be able to pull themselves up and hold positions of authority and so on. In many cases, though, in the north, it was a notion, although some might say it was misguided, of not having the children go into the cane fields, what was called the third gang. And the schools were very keen in making sure that the children came out with something. I'll give you a little story, you know, in the tribute. I am doing some work on Sir Elliot Belgrove, and he and Sylvester Williams, who was the former Assistant Commissioner of Police, they were walking from Boscobel to the old Corey School, which is just above Spikestown. This would be in the 1940s. And they would be in uniform and in shoes because, generally speaking, people would be in barefoot. And many of us who went to Corydon School, the first time we were to school shoes was when we actually went to the school. But the women who were in the cane fields, as Sir Elliot pointed out, dropped the canes and so on that they were doing and ran to the hedgerow just to congratulate and speak to these boys and say to them, behave yourselves, get to school early. Don't give the masters any trouble. Make sure that you get some certificates and you don't waste your father's money. But it was a little bit more than that. It was that these working class women, were seeing the future of Barbados in those two young boys.
Well, I will just want to draw attention to the fact that quite a lot of attention is paid to the secondary school, but in this contribution, you have alluded to the All Saints Primary School.
Yes.
And in many instances, when people start to talk about where a person like the late Owen Arthur began, the primary school is completely forgotten. And therefore, there is a need perhaps to readjust some of what we hear from time to time about where it all began.
Mr. Ellis, that is extremely important. And that has been destroyed by the promotion of the 11 plus. And somebody, people may not agree with that, but it's very important. because the local people in those primary schools, even that there were not a lot of secondary schools and the schools were small, but what they tried to make sure was what I would say the elevation of character and perseverance and manners and things of that nature.
Many instances, so, the child that you meet at in first form at secondary school has already been molded by the primary school experience.
That is correct. And that was very, very important. And so that level of grounding, sometimes even if the student did not get into the secondary schools because the numbers were small, people say a lot of reasons, but the schools were very small.
Okay.
In the 1940s, when I was speaking about, the Corey School didn't have 50 boys, you know.
Right. All right, and but we're gonna have to.
Yeah, but I just want to say that Mr. Arthur, it was really exemplified how the ordinary person from the household, and he is a neighbor of West Terrace. He is my neighbor actually, so we got to know him down here before he was actual prime minister, and he was at that time he was among us. And when he became Prime Minister, he actually invited the persons in West Terrace to Ilara Court. And what we did, we also had a cricket match on his behalf and so on. I also want to thank him because when he was at St. Leonard's, I just want to get this in, a school that almost killed me because of hard work and the degradation of the school, the physical plant and so on. It was really through him, Mr. Arthur, who actually came to the school to do computer science. Vajpayee had given the school a computer lab, and Mr. Arthur was Prime Minister, but he was not too proud to come down the gap, along with the Ambassador of America, Janet Hyde, to get some tutoring there.
Okay. All right,
and
well,
it was there. I just want to mention
we have to wrap up. Thank you.
I'm wrapping up.
Yes, please.
But he would be in the background in being instrumental in the redevelopment and upgrading of the St. Leonard School.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alvin Adams. This is down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. In fact, I'm a part of All Saints and Coresbury. And I'm glad to hear you talk about the primary school. And I would say for All Saints that All Saints is a remarkable school. In fact, I went to there with Mr. Thorne, 80, I think he was Hugh Thorne. I'm sorry that I never met him when I left school, and because he was such a nice person when I entered the school, and when I went to the school, I always remember how he put his hand around me and made me feel so comfortable. But All Saints was a beautiful place. I think that what made the difference in those days. Don't forget, many children in the country didn't have access to library, because if you were living in like Fort Hill and Diamond Corner and the Black Bass and St. Peter, David, as you would know, people this kids go to Spikestown. The only library is in Spikestown.
Well, I think we really have to create an opportunity where we could look a little bit more in more detail at, you know, the primary school connection. You know, naturally today the focus is more on this tribute to the late Owen Arthur, former Prime Minister. So put that in context for me.
Yeah, but I was trying to put that in the context of the Owen. I knew him at All Saints. In fact, he was behind me. I knew him as a little boy. Behind me, he was a few years behind me. Or then he came to Coresbury behind me. But I'm talking about the school. Why the school? Mr. Adams was talking about the school. But one of the reasons why All Saints was such. In fact, one teacher who taught me there, I met him some years ago, and he told me that All Saints was very fortunate. It comes back to the presence of the Parish School and the Core School. You know what he told me? All Saints was able to get some of the finest students coming out of those schools. Because he told me, in those days, it was in the 40s, for example, he said it was, when he told me he joined the school All Saints in 44, something before he was born. But he told me that the some headmasters didn't want secondary boys. But the headmaster of the time at All Saints embraced many of them. So that by the time I entered All Saints, virtually all my teachers had attended, I remember, virtually all, I think all of them, have gone to the Parish School or Court School.
Yeah.
And we have some excellent teachers. So I could say this, I don't want to boast about myself. But I, when I passed the entrance exam at Court in Parish School, Chris Springer, the then headmaster, I came from All Saints, and Chris Springer, the then headmaster, told my mother, this is good, and this is a tribute to All Saints, that I was very outstanding in the exam.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hey, good evening.
Yes, good afternoon.
Glenn Clark,
MP?
Yes, please.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have to pay tribute to my great friend, Wayne Seymour Arthur, who was, to my mind, the grassroots prime minister, who's transformed the Baptist Labour Party into a lower middle class party. He achieved the highest office because of his brilliance, his intellect, and his socialization with the common man.
What do you remember most about him?
His kindness, his fairness, because I know that I have a sharp tongue, fearless mind, and was not one to fumble or delay his feelings. If after one to say something to you, he said it, and he was fearless. He was one who passed on to us the mechanics of politics, and I thought that it is very important to note that after we lost the 1991 election, he took myself, Prime Minister Mayor Motley, and one on top of him. He said there was no reason why you had to lose in 1991. And he told us the mechanics of politics. He showed us how we could have won that election.
How so?
And from there, because he put into us mechanics of politics. He set up a machinery in the political system for us. In each constituency, you had captains of each particular box. You had persons who were in the various areas. You had to know everybody who were similar to what Tom Allen did, but he did it in a more genuine way. And I thought he has left the Labour Party a stronger fighting machinery after 1994. And I must tell you that he once said to me, wherever I am, you will be. I will carry you with me because of who you are. And he looked for common people.
You know, against that background, share with us how it would feel after a person has been leading you for all these years, sharing so much with you, to then leave the Labour Party. What did that do to you personally?
Well, when he left the Labour Party, I spoke to him. I said to him, he told me he was going to leave, but this was not the very first time. Because he had, as Secretary of the Parliamentary Party, Owen had written many letters to the Labour Party saying he was frustrated. He once said that he would go to on the back bench and would criticize anything any minister had done. He was that type of person. But he left the Labour Party in 2017, thereabout. I never followed him, but we remained friends up to the passing. We remained close friends. I told him that because both of us, in the early days, supported the borough's policy. And this is must be said, because they heard Hans Ben on the radio quite recently. And he said that we were supportive of the borough policy. And that is very important. We supported pre-secondary education. We supported the way how borough was taking the country in the 70s. But we never joined the Democratic Labour Party. We both joined the Barbers Labour Party in the late 70s. No, he was in Jamaica. I was in Barbados. He helped to organize the campaign for the former Speaker of the House, Burton Hines, whereas I worked for Nigel Barra and Jack Holder in the St. George area. So we both came into the party strong in the 80s. I was in Toronto as Vice Consul, and he went to the Senate under Tom Adams. But Tom Adams always enjoyed the brilliance of Owen Arthur. He was a brilliant mind. And this is where it is. I thought that during that period, the latter part of the 70s, early 80s, that Owen Arthur brought a difference to the Barbados Labour Party. He was the soul of the Barbados Labour Party during those years. And he felt at the time that Barbados Labour Party need to bring candidates that were suitable for the time. And I remember once he came to the National Council with a jacket over his shoulder. He said, if you run certain people, then I will walk away from the Barbados Labour Party. And then he walked away. And that was the type of person he was. Sharp intellect. Now, after 1994, I served to him as his parliamentary secretary, and then I went to the ministry. But I must tell you that Owen Arthur always brought the difference. He was punctual in whatever he did. He was a teacher type of prime minister who always said to us, do not forget where you come from. You must always ensure that you look after your constituency, and he came to office to stop poor people from being poor. That was the type of person he was. And I enjoyed conversations with him. The reason why I say he was kind, he would leave his office at Bay Street and go down to Muster for lunch. He wanted just some big kills out of pork chop, and he was happy with that. This was the type of person he was. Then he learned that John Moore's bar was being closed. He said to me, as Minister of Housing, I want to acquire the property for John Moore. That's the type of person. Always look after the common man. That's why I say that he was the grassroots prime minister. Having set up the Rural Development Commission and the Urban Commission, he wanted to see the small things being done on behalf of the poor people. He was very humble in terms of sitting around the table, playing the dominoes at the Glebe, in the shop, in Marleyvale, St. Philip, or in Dynamo Corner. That was the type of man he was. Whenever he traveled, he would bring back ties. He liked ties. He would bring back whatever ties he got for me. And in fact, I still have a number of ties. One day he bought a bag of ties. I went to open it. I said, where did you get these from? He said, I bought them all for you. That was the type of man he was.
He liked to cook. You ate any of his food?
Yeah, he was a great cook. But of course, he and I differed on many occasions because he liked pork, I liked fish. But he was also a lover of fish, but he was more into the pork chop. He made a sorrel. Oh, he liked sorrel. Every Christmas he would make sorrel for the boys. He would send a bottle of sorrel for myself, for Hallam, and for his close friends. He was very good at in the kitchen. So he followed Barr in this respect. But like Barr, he always believed in a common man. He never wanted, he always said, I do not want anything after my death, after my passing. I do not want any accolades. I want to remain as myself.
Some people feel that he seemed to admire Barrow more than he did Tom Adams, that he did more to honor Barrow's name than that of Tom Adams, who brought him into politics and fought on his behalf, especially in the second by-election in St. Peter.
As I said, as young boys, we respected and looked at the work of Barrow. After Barrow's in 1976, we recognized that Tom Adams had this type of ability. Tom Adams was brilliant. I think he admired Tom Adams for his brilliance and for the way the party was going. Because, you see, Adams was taking the party based on the recommendation of the Moyne Commission. And that's why I always say to the party, the Moyne Commission of 1937 thereafter put a shape for the Barbados Labour Party. And the recommendations were to improve housing, to improve working conditions, to improve the lot of the poor man. And that's what Arthur tried to do. That's what he tried to do. And he succeeded in great measures because, as you know, he not only set up the Rural Commission, but he also looked at things to remember the Remembrance Day, Emancipation Day. All these are things that Arthur did to remember the people of this country.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. We are going into the home stretch now in this tribute to the late Owen Arthur, former Prime Minister of Barbados. I come back to Ambassador, High Commissioner Reginald Farley and Ambassador Noel Lynch, because one of the things that people who were close to Owen Arthur would tell you is that he had an excellent library. And because he had been exposed to he worked in a library in Jamaica in his early days there at university, and brought back to Barbados that meticulous and methodical way of being able to set up a library. I don't know how many of you got the opportunity to actually see what he had done in that regard, but I think one day then it was pretty impressive.
Yes, David. And not only a library as in collection of his many readings, the law, economics, society, and so on, but all of his cabinet papers
were mapped through the 14 years in government. They're cataloged, they're bound. In terms of what will happen to them, I know that he was torn between two loves, University of the West Indies and Spicetown. So somewhere between the, I know for sure that a large, when he was professor in practice at UB, a large collection of the work was there in his office. They provided room there for storage and so on. But I believe that he had a vision of having his papers either there or in Spicetown. But the idea is that prime ministers should leave work, they should leave records, leave ideas for students of the future to study. For example, one of the things they did in this regard was to have the federal papers brought to Barbados, where they housed at UWA. And when we were in cabinet, we were fortunate to visit there. I saw cabinet papers from the federal parliament. I saw the constitution, coat of arms, all the instruments of government of the federation. Let me say that his love for learning and history and so on was reflected in some of the things that he did that people don't sometimes remember. Glenn Clark made mention just now of Emancipation Day. But I also want to add to that, that not only Emancipation Day celebration, but the Walk for Freedom, which included, for example, in 1997, Fidel Castro making that walk to Bussa to celebrate, because he was interested in national identity and helping us as we move and build the nation, the project of nationhood, from independence to nationhood, that we knew who we were. The National Heroes Act, where we have legislation to create the framework for national heroes and identifying the first 10 through a national consultative process and use of experts. The Rock Hall Freedom Village represented the first free village in Barbados. And of course, the started the erection of the heroes, national heroes, Barrow and Adams statue. And that I think was important, as was again reflected in his approach to the economy. The economy was not made good for the economy's own sake. It was to reduce poverty, as it did. It expanded the middle class. The 30,000 jobs was all part of that. The land tenure. Tom Adams had the Plantation Tenantries Act, and Owen Arthur had the urban and rural tenantries, the private tenantries. And if you look around Barbados and you see the quality of housing in a wide range of areas, it's because of those two bits of empowerment to allow the black working class people of Barbados not only to have identity, but to be able to have property. And so and the other thing I want to mention, David, that we haven't mentioned today, is the social partnership. From a political and economic and social to some extent perspective, he recognized the importance of consultation. Yes, the social partnership predated him, but it was largely an economic instrument to stop the devaluation of the dollar and really financial circumstances. He could have, when things improve, abandoned it. Instead, he not only expanded the social partnership, but created a subcommittee which I chaired for the first 10 years of it. And we met every month to be the first line of consultation between the government, the private sector, and the trade unions on matters of major national importance. And I'm pleased to see that that institution lives on today, and it has been one of the key platforms on which Prime Minister Bondi has been able to effect the economic reforms that we're going through today. So those are some of the additional matters that I wanted to raise in terms of Prime Minister Arthur's contribution.
Ambassador Lynch?
David, as where I'm concerned, I was always struck from the time I got to know Owen Arthur about the breadth and depth of his knowledge. And like you, when I first went to his house and saw the catalogue, the way in which he catalogued everything in his own home library, it was stunning to me. Arthur could have spoken about any subject intelligently. Arthur knew a lot about cricket, for example. I heard David Simmons today talking about the law. But I saw him in action in cabinet, taking on lawyers within the cabinet circle and being able to deal with them, particularly on constitutional law issues, in a way that exposed the fact that he had this humongous library in his own house and how well he cataloged it. He was one always to quote from Thomas Gray's this elegy in a country churchyard, which is a memorial to humble, rustic folk, in a way which he described himself. It is really honoring the common everyday folk, and it speaks to how you want to remember when you're gone. And he talked about this, and then he would also quote, he had a list of quotes. He showed me in his house a list of quotations that he had that were serious quotations. And every time he spoke to us, he talked about clarity of thought, sense of purpose, expected outcomes. He actually took all these things into himself, and he would spout all these things. But really and truly, I do hope that Barbados can get to a stage. You know, in the United States, they do these libraries for presidents, presidential libraries. And I really do hope that we can set up a prime ministerial library for Owen Arthur somewhere in Spikestown, because I like Reggie, I think his love for UE maybe Spikestown. I'd rather that Owen Arthur's library, all that entire catalog, be in one place and be in Spikestown. One other thing that I will just quickly say is that I think it's unfortunate that many of our prime ministers don't have a lot of writings. Many of them never wrote. And I don't think people wrote about them, but they never really had books. They never wrote texts. And I really think it's important, even though Owen has all of his cabinet papers and everything else, that it's unfortunate that we really didn't have a book about his own experiences. I know he was working on his memoirs. He actually told me that some weeks ago before he passed, that he was actually working on his memoirs. And I really would like to see us erect that library in Spikestown to his honor. Thank you.
Let's take one last call. Good afternoon. We are now at 1:55. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, David.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, hi. Quickly, because I understand this is the home stretch.
Yes.
This is Cappy Greenwich.
Oh, wonderful, yes.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone can question the brilliance of Owen Arthur and the economic prowess of the man. And as a politician, sir, I do believe that my relationship with Owen went beyond politics. You know, friends feel each other's joys and sorrows as if they were their own, and that is how I felt about him. When he was in good spirits, I found myself in good spirits too. And when he needed some empathy, of course, I was there and I empathized with him. I live in Marleyvale, and Owen Arthur himself was a Marleyvale man. He came to and made that connection in Marleyvale through me. I am sure about that. And he pushed my door. He pushed Movell Jordan's door, Evelyn Skeet's door, John Clark's door. All these are Marleyvale people. And he was there. He was a grassroots person in the true sense of the word. I remember him catching a bus as a young boy. He was first year at Cahill, I think it was, and he came up to St. Philip. And I introduced him to my mother. I introduced him to my mother as the former Prime Minister of Barbados. And when he did become Prime Minister, she said to me, "You remember what you told me the first time I met him?" And I had to admit, yes, I never forgot it. Ernest Roach, for another classic example, I was a student at Cahill doing English. So was Roachford. Mr. Roachford was his old teacher at College Prairie. And Mr. Roachford was finding, and I did too, a poet called Alexander Pope. Very difficult to understand. I saw Owen Arthur put him in front of him, sat him down, and said, Rochi, come, you taught me, I can teach you now.
Okay.
And he went through that poem or that poet with him until Rochi was able in about 2 hours to say, I now understand what I have to look for.
Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. Most of all of you who participated in today's special tribute to the Right Honorable Owen Arthur, former Prime Minister of Barbados. You included Sir David Simmons, Chris Sinclair, Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell, Sir Henry Ford, Reginald Farley, Noah Lynch, our ambassador to Washington in the OAS. You've just heard from Senator Cappy Greenidge. We also heard from Hainsley Benn and so many others. We want to say thank you. And we also express thanks for the contribution, the outstanding contribution, which the Right Honorable Owen Arthur has made to the people of Barbados and the people of this Caribbean. Our condolences to his wife, his children, and to all those who have been close to him. This has been Down to Brass Tacks.